every morning, I get up and my cat comes into our bedroom, meowing, jumping on the bed, purring, and doing all kinds of funny things, trying to get my attention, as if to say, "Hey, Dad, I'm hungry, I'm hungry." And that becomes a routine. But sometimes I'll go downstairs into our basement and I'll see that the bowl that my cat eats out of is empty. And she's not around at the moment. She's not trying to get my attention. She's not trying to say, "Dad, I'm hungry." But I grab a hold of that bag of cat food and I shake the cat food. It makes that sound. The food going up and down in the bag. And as that bag makes that sound, all of a sudden, I see two eyes coming around the corner and her running down the stairs because she heard the shh, 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 and thought to herself, "Ah, food. I'm hungry. I want some." That fish and chicken tasting food, I want some of that. Conditioning. Conditioning. Maybe you have a dog like Ivan Pavlov had, and that dog, when he hears that noise or he hears you with that shh, shh, with that bag of dog food, and you have the big bowl for the dog, and the dog there are these cues and these noises, and he begins to salivate, and he knows he's about to eat. Dig in and be satisfied. Conditioning. Our dog and our cat, they hear the sounds of food. They hear the sounds of stimuli. They hear the sounds that stimulate the brain and say, "Aha, it's time to eat." Even if they may not be necessarily hungry, that sound of the food bag tells them otherwise. And they want it now. And they rush in where you are by the bowl and the bag. And you can put your, or he or she, that dog or cat can put its face into that food. Now, gotta have it. Because then I will be satisfied. Well, Ivan Pavlov, he brings us into this area of psychology that has to do with how stimuli stimulates the brain, outside forces, and then causes a desire, a demand, and also one of our urges to be met. Conditioning. We are conditioned to respond to certain cues and triggers all around us. For example, when we think about addiction and we think about how there are certain triggers and cues and signs that trigger our brain, and we got to have the drug of choice because that's something we're attached to. Like the cat food, we need it, so we think. Of course, with our pets, they do need the food, but then at times, do they really need the food at that time? They just think, "Oh, there's that sign, there's that cue, there's that sound. There's that trigger, there's that sense of rejection, there's that person I just saw and reminded me of that past event that was so traumatic. Ooh, I've got to use my drug of choice." And sometimes our drug of choice may be food. You see, Ivan Pavlov and his groundbreaking work and his time, helped us to understand. And really what the scriptures say in the book of Proverbs so often, as everything comes out of scripture, we've been saying all the way along in this course, psychology comes right out of scripture. You can see it. You can read it. And experience it. Because psychology and the whole phenomena of conditioning can be seen in the book of Proverbs. For instance, of course, as we read about a kind word settles down, to paraphrase, settles down a harsh comment. And other dynamics. So let's take a look at Pavlov. Let's take a look at what Pavlov has to show us here about the term classical conditioning. Because compared to Pavlov, we'll get into B.F. Skinner, we'll look at operant conditioning, which is similar yet different. What was Pavlov teaching us? What did he learn with his experiments? Well, see, Pavlov, he came up with this term, classical or conditioning. We call it classical conditioning now. But it's that learning that occurs when a neutral stimulus, that is a tone, say from a horn or a car, or perhaps of something else, becomes associated with a stimulus that is food or drugs or other things, that naturally produces a behavior. So, let's read this again. Conditioning is learning that occurs when a neutral stimulus or tone becomes associated with a stimulus or food that naturally produces a behavior. Now, Pavlov's experiment was with his dog. You may have heard about this from before, from people talking about it, or maybe you took a different class and this came up. Well, for review, conditioning goes like this. As you can see in the top left corner, we have the dog before the conditioning. The food is there. It's an unconditioned stimulus. The dog sees the food. He begins to salivate. It's an unconditioned response. And then the image just below that, during conditioning, there is a bell plus the food. But now let's go back up to before conditioning. Food and the response, the dog sees the food, but then the image next to that image is the dog and the bell. There's no salivation. It's a neutral stimulus as far as the bell is concerned. No conditioned response. There's nothing really going on there. The dog is just looking at the bell. Of course, the dog is looking at the food and begins to salivate because he can smell it. He knows what that is. And you could almost make the argument that the dog smells it, therefore he salivates. That could be a form of conditioning, true. However, Pavlov was more interested in the tone of the bell. So, during conditioning, the bell is associated with the food. Hence a response. Yet there's an unconditioned response. So Pavlov is noticing, observing, and learning that as the dog sees the food, there's salivation. But then what about associating where the dog realizes that the food with the bell that is rung right by the food, there's some kind of connection. So after a while doing this, a day came where he then rang the bell only without the food being present, and the dog hears that tone. An unconditioned stimulus, a conditioned response. Dog hears the bell, dog begins to salivate. Just like with my cat. Here's the sound of the food, the dry cat food going up and down in the bag, making the noise, and then knowing that, ooh, that sound, like none other in the house, means I can eat. I want that. I'm going to behave in a behavior, in a manner of desire to go down and partake in the food my dad is now pouring into my bowl. Pavlov 2, the dog and the bell. The dog and the bell then, as we can see, became very well connected. That bell became very well connected with the food in the bowl. The bowl with the dog, and so on. And so, we look at these components of classical conditioning. First of all, unconditioned stimulus. An unconditioned stimulus is something, such as the food, which we saw in the image, that triggers a naturally occurring response. And the unconditioned response is the naturally occurring response, such as salivation, that follows the unconditioned stimulus. In other words, the food triggers a natural occurring response, and then the naturally occurring response happens then where the dog begins to salivate and begins to desire the food. But the food is an unconditioned stimulus. We do not need to condition that stimuli. And so, as the food becomes, it's just static, it's just there. However, it has a smell to it. The real conditioning happens when the bell is rung and the dog hears the bell as opposed to smelling the food. And then we know that the dog begins to salivate and want to eat. So that's the unconditioned response or stimulus. The unconditioned stimulus. And so we go from the unconditioned stimulus, which produces the unconditioned response, to a neutral stimulus that produces no particular response, to a conditioned response. And that's, again, what we were seeing here in the flow chart here of what was going on with the dog and the bell and the food. And Pavlov was beginning to put two and two together. He's beginning to put all the components together. From the unconditioned stimulus now to the conditioned stimulus. The conditioned stimulus, or CS for short, is a neutral stimulus that after being repeatedly presented prior to the unconditioned stimulus, evokes a similar response as the unconditioned stimulus. So let's take a look more deeper into this. We have the higher order and second order conditioning. We go back to our kitty cat here. Not my cat, but a different cat. And as you can see, the conditioned stimulus is the electric can opener, kind of like the bell. The food, of course, is the unconditioned stimulus. Salivation happens in the cat as an unconditioned response. But then we have, let's say we have the squeaky cabinet door, which is a second order stimulus. First order, the high order, because the electric can opener. Now we have the squeaky cabinet door associated with the electric can opener, which is a conditioned stimulus. The cat knows what that is. But let's say that we connect the conditioned stimulus, the electric can opener, with the squeaky cabinet door. And salivation happens with the cat. Still with the electric can opener going, and then you have the squeaky door cabinet, just like the dog and the bell. Hence, instead of the bell here, we have the squeaky cabinet door. So every time that cat hears the squeaky cabinet door in this example, he or she begins to think and therefore respond with salivation and also desire to eat, as opposed to the electric can opener. So what Pavlov was discovering and also proving is that there are other stimuli that can associate with key stimuli, the first high-order stimuli, such that the cat or the dog will then hear that other's tone and then associate it in their brains with the food that they so love and desire. Stimuli, conditioning. Think about you, your own self. If you are driving down the road and you see just a flashing sign on that road or the billboard as you're driving down the freeway, and that next exit, you don't smell the food. You just see the color and you see the image on the billboard. And then you begin to want that hamburger. You begin to want that steak. You begin to want to stop for pancakes. Because, color, image, pancakes, yum, satisfied. Conditioned and unconditioned stimuli. Pavlov was onto something. He had a breakthrough. And what he had a breakthrough with was this, is that he began to discover that the brain begins to associate. The brain begins to learn. Because with the conditioned response, as opposed to the unconditioned response, that it is the acquired response to the formerly neutral stimulus. So the acquired response to the formerly neutral stimulus, going back, is that we see that the cat responds to that squeaky cabinet door. And so that neutral stimulus, second order stimulus, as opposed to the conditioned stimulus, brings a conditioned response. Then there's the term extinction. Extinction. Extinction is the reduction in responding that occurs when the conditioned stimulus is presented repeatedly without the unconditioned stimulus. What do we mean? It means that there's adaptation, there's tolerance and adaptation that begins to happen, and things begin to become too familiar. And something else that Pavlov was discovering as well. But then there's another component called spontaneous recovery, which is the increase in responding to the conditioned stimulus following a pause after extinction. So, for example, let's say that you stop doing the squeaky door with the cat, and that because the cat has become too familiar. Oh, there's that squeaky door again. Oh, there's that electric can opener. And after a while, that doesn't really become as much of a stimulus that really evokes a response. The cat becomes used to it, in other words. And that's where we get this whole understanding that we get used to things. And we don't respond to things as we used to, when things were fresh and new and regular for a while. But at some point, we become used to it, and it becomes ineffectual in terms of evoking a response from a stimulus. But then there's a spontaneous recovery. Let's say you stop that stimulus. Let's say you pull back with the squeaky cabinet, or pull back with the electric can opener, or the shaking of the food bag. Then you return to it after a while, a good month or so maybe, and then what happens is this, it's a spontaneous recovery. Oh, I remember that. It's the increase in responding to the conditioned stimulus following a pause after extinction. It's kind of like when I want my coffee. You've been seeing me a lot with my coffee mug. We often, as a family, buy whole bean coffee. Ooh, very good. Maybe you do too. And I put those beans into the coffee grinder, and I press the button, and it makes that sound. And when that sound goes up, it's like, ah, can't wait to get it into that coffee maker, get the water flowing, get it hot, and get it smelling good with that Kenyan coffee or that Kona blend, or maybe it's the Ethiopian blend, whichever. It's amazing. Ooh. And the olfactories, the brain says, yes, now you're talking. But even before I taste it and say, ah, yes. When I hear that woo of the grinding, my brain's already salivating, if you will, and begin to put a desire in my mouth, saying, I've got to taste it. But let's say I get too used to that grinding sound of the beans. That grinding sound of the beans just does not, it's like, it's just routine. Well, then let's say I stop grinding the beans for a while, and let's say that I stop buying beans for that very reason. It's just becoming routine, regular. And I go ahead and I buy the store brand coffee already ground in a big tub and put it in my cupboard. Well, then, a month later, it'd be good to buy some whole bean coffee again. And I do. And I get out the bean grinder, get that bag of beans, start, even the sound of the beans, all of a sudden, it's beginning, you know? Your mind begins to get ahead of yourself, and you want to have that coffee now, and the grinding, ooh, can't wait. Because the brain is then stimulated to say, I want that taste of that great coffee. Spontaneous recovery. And a spontaneous recovery is that increase in responding to that stimulus, conditioned stimulus, following a pause after extinction. Generalization is that tendency to respond to stimuli that resemble the original conditioned stimulus. So we begin to put things together in our minds, where we begin to put it in groups, and how something with some stimuli become unique because it stands out. Kind of like that unique mug. I've never had a Yeti mug before. I always have ceramic mugs and some other plastic mugs, but I didn't like them too well. But once I got this Yeti mug, it stood out unique, and I began to realize how it was insulated, and I could have that coffee in there, stayed hot, fresh. Ooh, what a great invention. But then I put it in my cupboard with my other mugs. And I began to generalize this unique mug, this great mug, with all the others. So your mind begins to generalize. Just like how we generalize ideas and generalize experiences. Yeah, I've been overseas many times. Oh, yes, I fly regularly. And I have. Speaking from my own experience, I fly almost every, you know, now with COVID, of course, have not been able to, but every year I would fly to Asia and back. Look forward to that layover in the Middle East, and then off to Asia from there. Well, with that experience, I began to generalize the experience of flying 13 hours straight, and then flying another 8 hours from there. My first time and second time doing it, it was like, oh, this is exciting. It's adventurous. I can do this. But after a while, we begin to generalize the experience. Okay, I understand what that is. Hence, how the brain processes this. And that's what Pavlov was beginning to note, and beginning to mark that. And so as Pavlov was putting this all together, he was helping us to learn how our minds, our brains, are conditioned to respond to certain stimuli and therefore evoke certain behaviors. Some generalization, we go into discrimination. Discrimination, the tendency to respond to stimuli that resemble the original conditioned stimulus. I'll repeat. The tendency to respond to stimuli that resemble the original conditioned stimulus. And so, what we begin to do is we begin to discriminate. Oh, okay, it's that stimulus as opposed to that stimulus. It is that sound of the coffee bean is being grinded, as opposed to the shh sound of the food in the food bag, and perhaps, or a food, again, in our cereal bag that we tend to eat for breakfast, because you have cereal and coffee. Cereal evokes one stimulus, one response, that is, from that stimulus. The coffee beans, grinding them, evokes a different response from that stimulus. I get to drink that great coffee. I get to eat that great cereal because I enjoy the taste. And I begin to discriminate, to differentiate, that is, to sort out each one in my mind. And there are different responses to based on the different stimuli. Discrimination. And so from discrimination, we then go to second-order conditioning. Now, second-order conditioning is an existing conditioned stimulus that can serve as an unconditioned stimulus for a pairing with a new conditioned stimulus. I'll say it again. An existing conditioned stimulus can serve as an unconditioned stimulus for a pairing with a new conditioned stimulus. Let's take a look at what that means. Stimulus generalization. We look at, after a stimulus has been conditioned to produce a particular response, stimuli that are similar to the original stimulus can produce the same response. The greater the similarity between two stimuli, the greater the likelihood that stimulus generalization will occur. And this is what we were talking about earlier. And so we have these different stimuli. We have first order, we have second order, we have discrimination, we have generalization, stimuli. And we then go through these things such that what we are then understanding is that there are different things that cause different responses within our minds and also our behaviors. Let me give you two other examples that give us understanding of how this also works. Not only about coffee and cereal, but also about how we fight and how we flight. What we fear as well as what we welcome. But also how we respond to trauma and also mediocre things. So when it comes to these other examples, think about too how people that you work with, how they respond based on different stimuli. You have the abused wife that you're counseling in your ministry. Perhaps you're then looking at, of course, helping that young kid in the student ministry, the youth group. And he's depressed, and he's going through a lot of adolescent change, and it's up and down. Whoever it may be, there are different stimuli. And again, as we've been learning from Kohlberg and Fowler, there are different stages in physical, emotional, mental, and also spiritual development. You take all that together, and then bring that together now with stimuli then that then produces behavior. Well, there are times when we then have certain stimuli that cause certain fears, phobias. As you can tell, this mind map here, this word association, fear, phobia, being trapped, or terror, or danger. Fear about being around a spider, germs, or a fight, or other things. A phobia is a strong and irrational fear of a specific object, activity, or situation. Perhaps that is that fear of spiders, arachnophobia, or agoraphobia, or all these other different phobias, these different fears of people, places, and things. Fear. Because there are cues and triggers and signs, stimuli that are there, like that crowded elevator, for example. And there's claustrophobia, that fear of being in that enclosed space and seeing how the limits are within the space and how that produces a response to you of fear saying, I'm not going to go in there. You go. Or that spider that runs across the room and you are freaking out. Obviously, you have these unconditioned stimuli producing a conditioned response. But also, we then look at another thing, another fear, a response to trauma. And that is fear that comes through PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, due to a traumatic experience. That's where we get into the whole area of mental health. We look at, of course, you see these other words here, stress, insomnia, irritability, flashbacks, amnesia, mental health, of course, which is generic, looking at all things about of things being mental health, but also survivor, needing support because of the memories of the violence and these other things. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a severe anxiety disorder that can develop after exposure to a fearful event, such as the threat of death. And you see, when we look at PTSD, it brings us to those things and events and people and things where that have caused us stress and causes anxiety and also that stimulus and response where we've been conditioned. And often people come to you in your ministry saying, I need to get through this. I was in the war. I get through this abusive situation and all the examples from there. They need someone to walk with them. Come alongside them, not fix them, but to come alongside them. In another video to come, we're going to talk about personality disorders, how to understand them, what they mean, how they work, and how to help biblically, responsibly, and also ethically. My hope is that as you learned about classical conditioning today, that Pavlov has inspired you and also helped you to understand not only about how stimuli evoke responses and behavior, but also how we learn because of this form of psychology.